हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay page 84 This is within Archanam. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshipping the deity in the temple. Especially for householder devotees who are opulent in material possessions, the path of deity worship is strongly recommended. An opulent householder devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. One should not engage paid brahmanas to worship the deity. One does not personally worship the deity but engages paid servants instead, he is considered lazy, and his worship of the deity is called artificial.
So you become a miser, artificial, and lazy.
An opulent householder,
the opulent part we like, right?
Just lazy and that's what I think. An opulent householder can collect luxurious paraphernalia for deity worship. And consequently, for householder devotees, the worship of the deity is compulsory.
Like we see is... I'm not sure, was it Raghunath? Oh, no, was it? In just north of Calcutta, Panihati. Who was living there?
Raghunath Das.
So he Raghunath Das, but then Raghava Pandit. He would always engage servants to go out and find unique things. He heard about some really special daubs coming from some particular village. So he sent his men out to go get those daubs and things like that. So that's the meaning. The opulent householder, then he'll spend his time trying to find nice, luxurious things for the deities. Like I've seen some, always they do, you know, incense. They only buy from this one particular place, you know, because it's the best incense that they can find anywhere in the world. And then I would see them discussing it. Whenever I'd see them every 6 months or a year, and by this time it's adjusted. This company doesn't make as good. This one now makes some new special thing, and then so it's constantly changed. They're always trying to find what's the best, where's the best oils, the best incense, the best whatever it is that they can get. Does that make sense? That's the idea. So if one has facility, one does that. If not, then you know, fruit, flour, leaf, and water will work. Like that.
An opulent householder can collect luxurious paraphernalia for deity worship, and consequently, for householder devotees, the worship of the deity is compulsory.
So basically he's saying is that householders should be worshiping the deity in some way, either there or in the temple. Right? So if it's in the temple, then they're arranging there, doing service, trying to create facility there. If it's at home, then they're doing there. So in any case, everybody should be involved in the deity worship. Right. Is this like the brahmacharis may be out on the road, this and that, so they don't have much of a program and all that, but it'll still work because everything they're doing is direct. But for the householder, because so much of what they're doing is indirect, one needs to have that regular, exposure to the direct activities in a regulated way. So that's where Prabhupada says, therefore, deity worship is compulsory for the grihasthas. Right? That's why we have the temple program. That way everyone can be engaged in deity worship. Does that make sense? That doesn't mean you have to be on the altar, but you're there for the programs, attending the like that. So.
In our Krishna consciousness movement, there are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. But the deity worship in the temple should be performed especially by the householders. The brahmacharis can go with the sannyasis to preach. And the vanaprasthas should prepare themselves for the next status of renounced life, sannyas. Grihastha devotees, however, are generally engaged in material activities, and therefore, if they do not take to deity worship, their falling down is positively assured. You know, you can count on something, right? You know,
something. No question about that.
Yeah, okay. Deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely. That will keep one steady in devotional service. But there's the concept, though, it's the brahmacharis that they have to follow it very strictly, and the grihasthas don't. But as it mentioned here, it's actually the other way around. Because right? The brahmachari, what is he going to do? Right? It's going to be something connected with, you know, preaching and deities anyway. The grihastha is the one that has the difficulty. They have so many things in their life, they could get distracted. Therefore, the following everything very nicely is actually more important for them. Brahmacharis follow it in a simple way, but it's actually because the grihasthas work with more variety, they need to be able to follow these rules very carefully to make sure that in dealing with the variety, they don't get distracted. That's the whole idea. So this is the mode of ignorance where we switch the two. You know, very strict with the one, or very loose with the other. No, but then that's the whole point, is that the balance is lost. Okay. And so then it says here is, you know, falling down is positively assured. So then the whole point is then by following, that's how you bring up the community. That's how you get everything established. Right? When they say, oh, it can't be followed and this and that, but, you know, tons of people do follow it.
Who aren't lazy.
Yeah, who aren't lazy. Okay. Deity worship has two divisions, namely pure and mixed with fruit of activities. For one who is steady, deity worship is compulsory. Observing the various types of festivals such as Sri Janmashtami, Ram Navami, and Nrisimha Chaturdasi is also included in the process of deity worship. In other words, it is compulsory for householder devotees to observe these festivals. So the Nityan Naimittik. So just as we have the Nityan Naimittik within just the household duties, we have the Nityan Naimittik within the Pancharatrik system. Right, so that means the nityas are daily, like chanting the rounds and these kind of programs. And the naimittik means, you know, your ekadasis, janmashtamis, Nrisimha Chaturdasis. So all these different festivals are included. If they're followed, then one's household life becomes very stable and steady. Right? Does that make sense? Someone who's not steady, then it said it's not necessarily there. So you could say, it's okay, well, you know, for the greater community, all these things aren't practical. That's because they're not stable enough to actually take part in it. But one has to make a distinction between householders who are stable and can therefore take part in the regular activities of deity worship, and those who are not stable enough, therefore they don't come to that point. So those who are stable, then they would generally have second initiation. They would therefore then take part in the deity worship. Well, those who are unstable, they wouldn't have second initiation. That would be the difference. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important that we follow definitions as given by the Acharya. If we make up our own, we can come up with unlimited variety. You know? And of course, whichever one we come up with, we'll consider it's better. But then, you know, then you have across the street, and they have a whole different idea. You know? So that's the problem. Right? Across the valley, right? You know? Yes.
Deity worship has two divisions. Pure is undisturbed. Mixed with fruitive activities, that's also for devotees?
But no, it means that you're trying to get to the point of pure, but we may start with mixed.
In our desires or in our performance?
Performance, we should be following the rules, right. Unless you're mixing it with something else. Unless you're following a little tantra on the side or something.
Maybe. Hypothetical question.
Huh?
It's purely hypothetical question.
Purely hypothetical. Like that. Yes. Come in Darshan Artik and they light up and you've got a new program, it's just all lamps, and when it opens, then you notice that all the lamps have olive oil in them and they all have, you know, nine different little spaces to put the olive oil, right? So, yeah, so like this. Is that what you mean by mixed? Or?
That's what I want to find out.
You want to find out if that was okay. Okay. That means mixed is that we will still have material desire, but the point is that someone who's steady then through the application in deity worship, they can bring themselves to the pure platform. Because you're studying devotional service, that means we've been able to get rid of, you know, anarthas to a point where we can actually be consistent in our work, our deity worship. At that point, then we can take part in deity worship. Mm-hmm. So it's not that, oh, it's not necessary for the community by this, then it's, we would look at it, which is one way of looking at it, but the other way of looking at it with the same kind of extremity is that they're not qualified. That's why it's not for them. So instead of saying, oh, the community is not practical for them to do, then you point out is, yes, they're not qualified enough. That's why it's not practical. You know, does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So naturally one would want to qualify themselves. And then in qualifying, then you can take part. So that would be the method. Right? Then, from being stable and then being engaged, then you'll slowly, slowly, by the process, then get the knowledge and renunciation to be able to give up the mixed. So then you can come to pure devotional service. That's called Archan Siddhi. Right? By the deity worship, you can come to actually the perfectional platform. Yes? Yes, they're more engaged in the direct activities. That's the meaning. So it also means, like grihasthas, that's giving an ideal of grihasthas, so you're also talking about an ideal of brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, sannyasis. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, for those who are out on the road traveling in that, Prabhupada didn't necessarily recommend they have deities. Many do have, and they take care of nicely in that, and you see it's consistent. So it's one thing is that they have them, and after 3 years they're not worshipping them, then you understand that's why Prabhupada didn't recommend it. But then you have some that after 20, 30 years are still worshipping, so therefore that works. But the general point is that since the situations are always changing and adjusting and never the same, the facilities are never the same, the need in your time is never the same, that's why then having deity worship that should be regular then becomes a difficulty to balance. But if you somehow or another can balance it, fine, but it's not necessary. But what he's saying is for the grihasthas, it's necessary. You know what I'm saying? It means the other is not necessary, but if they can balance it, it works. But the other, it has to be balanced. It has to be brought in. Otherwise, where's the regulation? In other words, why do you get up in the morning? Just because you woke up, or the kid's making too much noise, or you're hungry, or somebody's ringing the bell at the door, you know, because you forgot you told the carpenter to come, and, you know, like that. Otherwise, why would you get up? What's the reason? Why do you go to bed? Because you can't keep your eyes open anymore, or the movie ended, or you know, you're really annoyed. You just want to go in the room and lock the door, or you know what I'm saying. And so, when do you eat? Because you're hungry. You know, what do you eat? Whatever you like. How do you dress? However you like. When do you take your bath? Whenever you feel like it, or you know, whatever's the standard of your wife. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So where's the regulation? That's why deity worship, by being there, then gives a regulation, a meaning to what you're doing. So it doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending goes on. But it's done in a regulated fashion. So then it becomes uplifting. Because anything done in a regulated form, you can advance it, you can develop it. But if it's not done in a regulated way, you can't advance it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah.
Okay. So the fruit activities doesn't mean honoring the Mahafruit.
Fruit and activities honoring Mahafruit. or just fruit. Mahafruit. Yes, very fruit. Yes.
Well, maybe in our can use that on one of the swallows. So but in outside circles, then people often worship the Lord with kamya, with samadhi. You worship Gopal,
yes.
You have a son, or you take all
personas.
So yes. Sometimes it's done with this.
That's what you're meaning by mixed.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
People
yes.
Worship
because of mixed.
Yeah,
oh, okay. Okay. That's a very nice way of doing. See what he's pointing out here is that there are those who are worshiping the deity because they want to get benefit from it. That's the reason they're worshiping, and so they'll worship very nicely, follow because the more intelligent they are, the more they want, then the more they'll follow nicely. The other is that they're doing it pure because the purpose is to please Krishna. So what I was describing to you before is within pure, we may be mixed within that. But what he's describing is a more broader range. That includes, you know, all the Hindus, the Smartas, all that. They're all performing deity worship, but it'll generally always be fruitive or mixed because they want some benefit from it.
Well, that's karma
funded? It would be within that, but it would be bhakti Mr. Karma. Like that. So that will be there. But at the same time, as someone who's doing bhakti Mr. Karma, many times is open to the concept of karma Mr. Bhakti. You know. So it's karma yoga, but it's just a matter of whether we put the emphasis on yoga. So for us it's yoga, but it's karma yoga. Or jnana yoga is yoga, but jnana yoga, bhakti, you know, so it's bhakti yoga, you know, like this. But they'll put the emphasis, it's karma, and you're using yoga to get it. Or jnana, you're using yoga to get it. But funny, when you get to bhakti, then it switches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's mixed with fruitive activities. Can that also include the desire for liberation of the Mayavadi?
Yes. Because many of them, they do nice worship and everything like that. It's not an uncommon thing. You have those Mayavadi, they do nothing like that. You have ones that have really opulent worship, really, really nice worship. You know, people go to see because it's done so nicely. And all that.
So against Rupa Goswami's definition of karma, jnana, and atman.
Yes. So they're using bhakti for karma, jnana. So that's another way you can say mixed. Like that. That would be a broader, that would include basically all followers of the Vedic culture. Because then you could say is that there's those who are following based on the Vaishnava principles and those who are following based on the Vedic principles. You know, more Panchopasana kind of thing. But then what we were giving before, Mataji, was that then we're talking within pure devotional service. The intent is pure devotional service, though we maybe still have some mix. So by performing it, then we'll come to that pure platform. But the intent is pure. But this other group, like Prabhu mentioned, their intent is not to come to pure. Their intent is come to karma or jnana. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Can we say that our fruitive tendencies mostly manifest in deity worship then? Because Ravanam Kirtanam, you do it because you have to do it. But when you have material desires, you want to get it from somewhere, so you go to the deities.
Yes, you could say. Yeah, probably very rare people are turning to the holy name and stuff. Because generally, if you're like that, you generally wouldn't. But it would be probably the quickest and the quickest in gaining and the quickest to purify yourself if it's through the holy name. But only because of their consciousness, not because the name and the deity are the same. You know. But yes, it would be more. You would turn to the deity for that. Yeah. Because our whole lifestyle is Pancharatra. Like that. So, but the Pancharatra is the Ekayana aspects from the Veda. So that way it's a Vedic lifestyle. But of Vedic is specifically Pancharatra. Does that make sense? Just like the philosophy comes from the Vedas. So in that way we're Vedic, but it's specifically, it's Vaishnava. Does that make sense? Yes.
Many times Vishnu Prabhupada mentions karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda. And upasana kanda, does that refer to Pancharatra?
It can. Means it's also, you can use it in two ways. Upasana can mean, you can mean all three of them meaning materialist, because upasana means worshipping the demigods and like that. But it also, upasana means worship, so it can also mean worship of Vishnu. So then in that case, we would be performing upasana karma. Then there's karma, karmas, and jnanas. So it just depends on how it's being used. You know?
Context.
Yeah, the context. Because in other words, you have the followers of the Vedas who are materialistic. Then it would include them in there. Upasana would be in there. But if we're talking about those who are worshiping the Supreme Lord and those who are materialistic, then we would count it on this side. Because we would count Upasana Kanda technically as it can be used either as karma or jnana. So those who are materialistic, they're worshiping a deity rather than just a generic yajna or ritual. You know, or just jnana. So they're worshipping a deity. So you could say those Maya bodies we were talking about, they do really nice worship. That would be Upasana Kanda for the purpose of liberation. Well, someone else might be doing Upasana for the purpose of elevating themselves to the heavenly planets. It's like yoga. Somebody who says, let's say, karma and jnana.
But sometimes we say karma jnana and yoga. Because yoga can go either towards karma or towards jnana. Means they can either merge into Vishnu, or they can just be happy with their, you know, mystic cities. Like that. But in its pure state, then yoga is for bhakti. They take up worship of the Lord. So the same way as karma can mean activities in Krishna consciousness, jnana can mean knowledge in Krishna consciousness. Right.
In the pure state of Vipassana, we have the Pancharatras headed by Narada Pancharatra.
Yes.
Mixed state of Vipassana, what texts do they perform their worship based upon?
We have a whole list. generally, it would mean they would be doing any of the five. You know, so they'd be worshipping Ganesh, Surya, Devi, was it Shiva or Vishnu, you know, in a situated mode of goodness. So like you hear of Satyanarayan Puja,
yes,
that's worship of Vishnu in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. So even though it looks like it's, they would call themselves Vaishnavas, but actually they're impersonalists. But talking to that group, depending if they're more, you know, more sincere or not, they would be able to relate to us. Or they would relate to what we're doing, but they think that our conclusion's wrong. But the lifestyle would be the same. That's the advantage of the Vedas, is these individuals are materialistic, and just as materialistic as someone who's not Vedic, like in the West. But because they're following the Vedic method to get there, then one, they're more successful at it, and two, is that when they come in contact with the devotees, then the lifestyle and the goals and everything are, it's easy to adjust.
Very compatible.
Yeah, because all they have to do is basically change their consciousness, but the activities don't change. Instead of seeing Vishnu in goodness, they see him in pure goodness. Right? You know, instead of getting up in Mangalarti because of the piety that will be accrued, you do it because it pleases the Lord, to see the Lord in the morning. Right? So that's why the Vedas are recommended. So it's never an option to oppose the Vedic version. It's just not one of the, you know, that's, it's one of the, you know, yeah, it's one of the nam aparads. So it means there's no cure for it except chanting. You know, other things like in seva aparads, there's things you can do, you know, chant or read Gita or worship Shaligram or something, there's like that. But for nam aparads, there's nothing except for chanting. So you can't take a nam aparad, make a philosophy out of it, and think that this is very progressive in devotional service.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, it's dangerous. Because otherwise there's no end.
Falling down, positively assured.
Yeah, positively assured. Money back guarantee. And the nice thing is that the warranty doesn't wear out. Okay. Okay. Srila Prabhupada then provides a few lists of offenses to be avoided while worshipping the deities. These lists are covered in our study of Nectar Devotion. Aha, okay. I was thinking that this is much longer, this section. In the process of worshipping the deity, it is sometimes enjoined that one worship the deity within the mind. In the Padma Purana, Uttarakhandada said, all persons can generally worship within the mind. Right? But when you worship in the mind, means you're following the recommended processes. Because that's what I was saying before, the grihastha with opulences, then he would manifest it. You would see the opulence and see the grand worship. But with someone who doesn't, then all that grand elements can be done in the mind. So they can do very simple worship just with water, but it's all done in the mind. It's not like it's, oh, nothing's done. When it says Dvaitacharya is worshipping with just water, it means that he's doing a very simple worship, but all of it's done very nicely. It just means it's done in the mind. Something like that. Yes?
It sounds like the worship in the mind is easier, but actually it's more difficult.
It's more difficult. But then the point is, since one has less facilities, there's less to distract you, so generally the mind is a little bit more peaceful. Unless you don't have facilities and your mind's distracted because you don't have facility, then you really have problem, because you can't do the opulent worship and you can't meditate. Right? You know, so yeah. Then you have a problem. Yes.
When the senses become more controlled, more calmed down, then one can do more in the mind, and one has to do less on the...
Yes, can be, but if you have opulence, you would do the other anyway. So you just do a manasa puja, you know, and then do that. Because no matter how opulent you have, it can be more opulent. You know, you have your little, you know, stainless steel tray, you know, to put your deities in. It could be gold. It could be, you know, how you say, you know, a nice... Sorry? A retina simhasana, you know, so nice, you know, made out of jewels or, you know, inlaid with jewels or all, you know, you could, there's no end to what you can do. So the point is, but it'll be done very quickly there. Well, if you're doing the manasa puja, since that's all you're doing, then you can do it a little bit more elaborate and make the connections nicely. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, whether it's, what do you call it? Slideshow or video. Right. That's the difference. So in manasa puja, you would generally do it as slideshow. But if you're doing it as that the puja in the mind, totally the whole thing, then you can do it as video.
It's YouTube.
Sorry?
YouTube.
Try not to change the channel too much.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, going along it.
Commercial-free.
Yeah, commercial-free, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what he's meaning about the distractions. So those are all the... The commercial is what you know, you could get or, you know, they're trying to make you want it. So we're even better at the commercials. We already skipped to the point of what I want. You know, so we've already crossed... You know, trying to get ourselves to want it. You know, so. Okay. It says all persons can generally worship within the mind. You know, generally they can, but, you know, like you said, sometimes not. You know. Okay.
Does it mean that it doesn't mean initiation also? Because usually after second initiation you can worship.
Yes, but yeah, you could also mean, yeah, generally anybody could do that, but also it's only when you become steady, because as you mentioned before, the mind gets distracted. When you become steady in devotional service, then you can do, so someone who's steady could do either the physical worship or the mental worship, either way. But before that, it'll be a little hit and miss. I guess in this case it would be you'd match the little, you know, little would be modifying the hit. Little hit, and then, and miss.
Quite steady on the missing.
Yeah, quite steady on the missing. So when you become steady on the hitting, that's when then you can do both. Okay. The Gautamiya Tantra states, for a sannyasi who has no home, worship of the deity within the mind is recommended. Right? So then they're doing, but it's just they don't have all that facility. So then someone who's used to that kind of thing, then that would be very nice for them. Because you can do, that's the nice thing about the mind, is it doesn't have to work by time either. You can do something very elaborate that would physically take a long time within a very short time. Like that. So as a sadhana, they would be there. So those who are doing the one then could do the other. Like that. In the Narada Pancharatra, it is stated by Lord Narayana that worship of the deity within the mind is called manasa puja. One can become free from the four miseries by this method. Sometimes worship from the mind can be independently executed, according to the instruction of Adihotra Muni, one of the Navayogendras, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One may worship the deity by chanting all the mantras. Eight kinds of deities are mentioned in the Shastra, and the mental deity is one of them. Footnote 21. The eight are metal, earth, wood, painting, stone, jewel, drawing, and mind. So they're all considered deities, and they all get benefits. So like Prabhupada, when he started the temples, they were all done with painting, you know, like that, a photograph nowadays. But the point is, it's one of the eight kinds of deities, but we take it that no deities has to be, you know, how you say, you know, wood or metal, like that. We don't take it other than that. Yes.
Do painting, drawing?
Yeah, painting is paka, drawing is simple. Like that.
Yantras also maybe drawing first?
Yeah, yantras are drawings. That's most likely what it's talking about.
So the photo, the drawing, or a painting?
Yes. You know, can it be done in charcoal? Does it have to be done in ink? You know, watercolors are okay. Yeah. The mind. But the point is, in this case, is the mind. So, we're worshipping in the temple. Generally, the deities are metal, earth, or wood. Sometimes you see water, so that would be the earth one, generally. Because then you have a pot, and then they're in the water. So sometimes in this list it says water. That means the water in the pot. Because that's where you're installing them, or you could take it as earth because you know the water's in the pot, mm-hmm. and so then you see the form of the pot and then like that. But then you could also have a metal pot. You know, you probably wouldn't have a wooden or a painted or a drawn pot. So, but you know, maybe kids draw the pot and then do the mental meditation of installing the pot. Okay, six bandhanam. Although prayers are a part of deity worship, they may be considered separate like the other items, such as hearing and chanting. So in deity worship, prayers are already part. So you're already getting the benefit. But at the same time, if someone could be not on the altar offering those prayers, but they could be in the temple offering prayers to the deities.
Somebody like Lord Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj used to always carry a prayer book with him.
Yes. The Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord. In this way, he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided. Right, because he gave before for the deity worship that whole big list. Okay. A, to offer obeisances on one hand.
That's it.
Right? Which is very popular, right? You have your beads in one hand and you kind of hold it and like that. It also is that because you don't offer respects. You always use two hands, you don't use one hand, you know, like that. So it's that or that or, you know, just yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They always use one hand. You know? It's supposed to be what happened to the other hand. Yeah, doing something and then somebody shows up and, you know. So who knows what the origin was originally, but.
You're doing it on your bicycle.
Yeah, two hands, yeah. But it's also, the funny part is because it's not common in the West, but if you do it, people understand it. No one has a problem with it. They just see it's more close, it's more personal like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's more, they appreciate it.
It's more of a holding hand.
Okay. Then B, to offer obeisances with one's body covered. Like that. So one's supposed to have the means. Either you take it as that you're wearing unsewn cloth. That would be the main point of it. Is that because the unsewn cloth, then it's considered, then, you know, the appropriate parts of the body are uncovered, you know, specifically the right shoulder and like that, the neck and things like that. So, if you want to become perfect at prayers, then in the temple when you're worshipping the deity and offering prayers, you have to be using unsewn cloth. But you'll also see in the tradition, it's also followed means from the waist up, you have no cloth. Right? The chadar that you normally have is tighter on the waist, and then you offer obeisances. Like that. So that's very, you know, it's like in South you see that's more strict and all that.
You can't get into the temple.
And sometimes like the, not Guru Bayur, Trivandrum. Trivandrum, you can't go in if you don't have unsewn cloth. You have to have your cloth around the waist. From the waist up, you have to not have any clothes. And in that temple, it's both men and women. It doesn't matter. But they have different times. But the point is, the women go without anything on the top. So that would be because of this rule. Like that. C, you know, sometimes have you seen Jananibas when he offers obeisances? He always takes the chadar off and on. It's because of this rule. C, to show one's back to the deity. Right? So if your thing is about prayers, you can't turn your back. So you always have to sit properly. To offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. So you're always on the deity's right when you offer obeisances. So sometimes you see devotees who understand this, if they happen to be on the left side, they turn so that their left side is to the deity when they offer obeisances. You know, the tendency is the deity is in the middle, you're on this side, you would offer obeisances this way, but they still offer that way. But it should be you're on this side, so you have to offer prayers from this side for the deity. Does that make sense?
So that means that deity is here, and so to the left, or to the right.
Means that you're always on the deity's right when offering prayers and obeisances if you want to perfect yourself in Bandhana.
To the deity's right.
The deity. Deity has a right and a left.
You find
it. Means you would have to, if you're going from your place, you'd be on the left side of the temple to offer prayers and obeisances to the deities. Because the left side of the temple is the deity's right side. Okay. Is that some sense?
And I also heard that with demigods, you will show your right side of your body facing the deities.
No, demigods is also left.
It is?
Yeah. It means it's any of those who are more elevated, it's always the left. It's when the spiritual master is present, you use the right side. Oh. Like that. So that's why when you have in the temple, in the Pancharatrik system, deities at one end, the acharyas at the other, then you, let's say, in that case, you would have your left side towards the deities and right side towards the acharyas. And that way then you would be facing. Or if you're on the other side, then you do it the other way around. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a gap down the middle, so that the acharya can see the deities, and no one would have their back to the deities. Mm-hmm. Right. So now mostly devotees don't put their back to the deities; they just put their back to Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Simple solution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
Maharaj, and what about turning around? Very often I see when going around the deities. When they face the deities, they turn in around.
Yes, because you're going to have your back to the deities, so they turn there, so that element of that they're facing the deity. That's just the way to get out of when you circumambulate, because as you go by, at some point, your back's to the deity. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's for that purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, some do it, some don't. Prabhupada did it. So. Prabhupada did it. So it's not uncommon. Okay. And E, to offer obeisances very near the deity, right? There has to be some kind of distance, because, you know, like that, you can't be too near. It's because there's the formality is there. So then one has... So that's why worship being so near is not the important thing. You know, it's where you can properly, you know, offer obeisances to the deities, interact with the deities, and that. Because also, you see, is the other aspect is very near, because if everyone's trying to very near, everyone's doing that. Everyone's going for darshan, and you can't. So you may offer your prayers there, but you'll go back to offer deities. You know, like you come up, offer flowers to the spiritual master, then go to the side and offer obeisances. Because if someone offers obeisances right there, no one else can offer any flowers. You know, so no one else can offer the prayers or do anything like that, because you're there. So obeisances would be something back. That makes some sense.
Yes.
Okay, Dasyam. There is the following statement in regard to assisting the Lord as a servant. After many, many thousands of births, when one comes to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, one can deliver others from this universe. If one simply continues to think that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, even without performing any other processes of devotional service, he can attain full success. For simply by this feeling, one can perform all nine processes of devotional service. So the focus will be, I'm a servant, therefore I'm chanting, I'm hearing, I'm, you know, remembering, I'm worshipping the deities, I'm, like that. So it's whichever one's prominent. You know, so I'm offering prayers, so therefore I'm chanting, I'm remembering, like this. So it's each one of them can be used as the central point that all the others are done. So that's the meaning of it. It's not that they did this one and didn't do any of the others. Yeah. But it means that this is where the mentality is. This is how they identify. Sakyam. In regard to worshipping the Lord as a friend, the Augusta Samhita states that a devotee engaged in performing devotional service by Shravanam and Kirtanam sometimes wants to see the Lord personally, and for this person he resides in the temple. Elsewhere, there's a statement, right, so here's just like by residing there, being there like that, so it has that element of sakyam, like that. So then we can see is this, you know, our tradition, you know, the Gaudiya tradition of living in the temple and all that, it has this basis in sakyam. You may not catch that, but that's actually a cause of it. Right? Mm-hmm. Elsewhere there's a statement, O my Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead. No. Yes. No. Supreme Personality and Eternal Friend. Although you are full of bliss and knowledge, you have become the friend of the residents of Vrindavan. How fortunate are these devotees. In this statement, the word friend is specifically used to indicate intense love. Friendship, therefore, is better than servitude. In the stage above Dasya Ras, the devotee accepts the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a friend. This is not at all astonishing, for when a devotee is pure in heart, the opulence of his worship of the deity diminishes as spontaneous love for the Personality of Godhead is manifested. In this regard, Sridhar Swami mentions Sri Dhamma Vipra, who expressed to himself his feelings of obligation, thinking, later, after life, may I be connected with Krishna in this friendly attitude.
Life after.
Huh?
Life.
Oh, life after life. I was thinking, why is he saying that? Okay.
After life.
Yes.
Sakyam is our preaching? That's the one?
Preaching, that's also that aspect. It'll also be described, because you want to do something to please the Lord. And so then he wants to see all living entities connected back to him, so therefore, then we preach. So that's also, because then you're seeing what work he wants to get done and you're helping him in that work. Right? You know, servitorship may be work that they're not doing, that you're doing to work. But friendship means you're doing their work. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you are invited to the house of a friend and they're having kind of a bit of a program. Right? So many people are coming. Now you'll see is that those who will come to the program sit there and just do what they're supposed to do and interact, you know, how they are. Then you'll see that there's those who are friends that, okay, they're taking care of these people, so they come forward and, you know, help serve or take care of things and all that. Though you haven't been asked, it's just there's that more that sense of friendship. So you're taking care of these guests, so they help you take care of the guests. You know what I'm saying? You know, when you sit and eat, then they eat and... Well, everybody else, you know, will sit there and, you know, attend the program and eat when they're like this and then go and like that. Does that make sense? So that's the aspect of friendship. Is you're doing their work. So since the Lord come to preach, therefore we preach, that's then sakya for me. So here, as we see, is the focus on opulence. It can mean that the opulence itself becomes reduced physically, or it can mean that stays the same, but one's focus on that, or one's being attracted by that. You know, in other words, talking without, you know, telling others about how opulent it is and how great it is and all that, that may go down. That's your standard that you do, so your focus now is on just pleasing the Lord. Atmanivedanam. The word Atmanivedanam refers to the stage at which one who has no motive other than to serve the Lord surrenders everything to the Lord and performs his activities only to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee is like a cow that is cared for by its master. When cared for by its master, a cow is not in anxiety over its maintenance. Such a cow is always devoted to its master, and it never acts independently, but only for the master's benefit. And so we see before is that the aspect that we're worshiping the Lord in opulence and all that, because we're doing that, but then as you're starting to move to the higher stage towards this Atmanivedanam, then that becomes less of an important thing. So it's in between. So the opulence goes down, that closeness comes up more, till it gets to Atmanivedanam, where you're just dependent on the Lord. You're not worried about, you know, your own facility and all that. You just perform your duties. Whatever's coming is by the Lord's arrangement. Some devotees therefore consider dedication of the body to the Lord to be Atmanivedanam. And as stated in the book known as Bhakti Vivek, sometimes dedication of the soul to the Lord is called Atmanivedanam. The best examples of Atmanivedanam are found in Bali Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj. Atmanivedam is also sometimes found in the behavior of Rukmini Devi at Dwarka. So that full surrender, but with her, you know, her it'll be with that right wing kind of aspect. You know, so that's why I said sometimes it seemed like that. The principle is that all one's activities, all one's facilities, one's, you know, heart and soul, everything is connected to the Lord. So that's what makes it Atmanivedam. So here Ambarish becomes counted in that, because he may be doing all the nine, so he's not counted like Bali Maharaj, but he is also doing Atmanivedanam. So therefore he can be counted as that one. So the one who became perfect by Atmanivedanam is Bali Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj is also has that sense of Atmanivedanam, though he's becoming perfect by all nine. Okay. So Narad Muni continued, after hearing these words of devotional service from the mouth of his son, Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry. Right? Could you imagine getting all this explained to you by your five-year-old son? Yeah. Yes. His lips trembling, he spoke as follows to Shunda, the son of his guru, Shukracharya. O unqualified, most heinous son of a brahmana, you have disobeyed my order and taken shelter of the party of my enemies. You have taught this poor boy about devotional service. What is this nonsense? So he's still taking it that he's just a five-year-old, so what can he know? So he knows all this so nicely, right? Now, why Shanda Namarka? Right? Because they're good teachers, right? Their father is the best, you know, one of two best in the universe, like that. I mean, there's others, but I'm just saying as far as Brahmins who then are teaching for the demigods and demons. So he would be on par there. So therefore, then, his sons would also be very good because they take pride in their seminal line, so he's going to make sure his sons are good. So now, how much is he knowing the essence and knowing devotional service, right? So nicely. So that means, what would that come from? From such good teaching. So therefore, it must be the fault of this Shanda and Amarka. So it appears that Shanda is the older of the two. You know, so therefore he's just pulling him over. Right?
Hiranyakashipu would be asking, what's the best you've learned from your teachers?
Yes.
And definitely thinking of
Kanye. Yeah, comes then. Yeah, true. He also said that, yes.
Also, previously, the Prahlad himself, he thinks these people are not my teacher, Narada is my real teacher.
Yes.
So that's why he's saying
that. Yes.
His father thinks.
They're talking about these guys. So he said, if he had asked the question, what's the best thing that you've learned from Shanda and Amarka, then he might have said, you know. No, he wasn't exact. Because he didn't want to be too exact, because he expects as a child, he, you know, will talk here and there, and so he's trying to give him that space. But he didn't understand by giving him that space became filled with Vishnu, right? You know, so that was not, you know, even though it's, you know, technically part of the philosophy, but.
You should have started off with, who are your teachers?
That, well, yeah, that's that. Okay. Okay, 25 to 26. Srila Prabhupada comments, in this verse, the word asaram means having no substance. It's significant, because he asked him, what's the essence? Sar. And so now he's calling him, you know, he has no, you know, asaram. He has no, what do you call it? No substance.
Nonsense.
It's significant. For a demon, there is no substance in the process of devotional service. But to a devotee, devotional service is the only essential factor in life. So then we're getting a slight difference of opinion on what is essential. Hiranyakashipu continued, in due course of time, various types of diseases are manifest in those who are sinful. Similarly, in this world, there are many deceptive friends in false garbs, but eventually, because of their false behavior, their actual enmity becomes manifest. Right? Because the first time it happened, okay, maybe a classmate, maybe this and that, the teacher should be careful about it. Now, the second time, he's even more nicely fixed in it and all that, and they were supposed to be careful, so then it must be now the teacher. So that means the first time is also confirmed with them. Not that it's the second time then confirms that the first also. So now two times in a row, then Shanda and Amarka, you know, must be the ones who are teaching. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, By good fortune, your partiality to the enemy has been revealed after so many days. Today, I will give you a suitable gift. He makes a general statement with a specific intention. The hatred of those with false friendship will become evident by faith, just as disease becomes manifest in a sinner. It is said in the Smriti, Brahma ha kshaya rogi, syatsura pa swa syava dantaka, svarna hari tu kunaki, duscharma guru talpaga. The killer of a Brahmin gets tuberculosis. The alcoholic gets discolored teeth. The gold thief gets diseased nails. He who violates the guru's wife gets leprosy. Yajnavalkya Smriti. Right? So Yajnavalkya gets into a little more detail than Manu. I think Manu mentions it here and there. He doesn't put it all in one place like this. Like that. Because he also mentions that from being a informant, you also get black teeth.
And also,
So his point is that by good fortune now I found out that you are the devious one. Otherwise, all this time he thought he was the nice guy. Then he finds out he's devious. So now he can take care of him. He can award him an appropriate gift for his station. The son of Sukracharya, Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master, said, "O enemy of Indra," right? So he has to get his approach proper here. Right? "O king, whatever your son Prahlad has said was not taught to him by me or anyone else. His spontaneous devotional service has naturally developed in him." Right. So here, even the demons are talking about spontaneous devotional service. Right? "Therefore, please give up your anger and do not unnecessarily accuse us. It is not good to insult a brahmana in this way." Sri Narada continued, "When Hiranyakashipu received this reply from the teacher, he again addressed his son Prahlad." Right? So it's not that, I know better, and just goes over on this. Then he stops. Okay. It appears that it's obvious you've taught him this. But when he says, "No, we didn't teach him this. This came spontaneously." Because they did ask him before, remember? And then he came up with this and understood it was spontaneous. Right? And so then they got out their stick, and then it was time for, danda. So then they go on with their lessons. So he was just speaking the truth. So as they speak, so then it would be proper, to check. I've seen that also. Good managers, they come in, they've heard this different situation, they've analyzed it, they've come up with what they see as a plausible solution. Then they call, they start, saying this, and then you say, "No, it's like that." They'll immediately then adjust. Oh. But then if it's something that needs to be confirmed, okay, then you say that, then they'll call that person. Then they say, "Did you say this?" And generally it's like, if you say, "What did you say to him?" "Well, I was just trying to, be supportive," and that kind of thing. Like that. But when you say, "Did you say this?" then it's really hard to pull that kind of stuff. So then like that, and then it's confirmed. So then it's like, okay, then, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you see, these are natural qualities that those who manage nicely, then they can go by this. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. It's good. So even though that's, otherwise how does he get to be control the whole universe unless he can do this? Mm-hmm. Right? You can't do this, you can, become a little controller, but not this big. Okay. Narad Muni continued, "When Hiranyakashipu received this reply from the teacher, he again addressed his son Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu said, 'You rascal, most fallen of our family, if you have not received this education from your teachers, where have you gotten it?'" Srila Prabhupada writes, "Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that devotional service is actually Bhadrashati, not Abhadrashati. In other words, knowledge of devotional service can be neither inauspicious nor contrary to etiquette," right? So probably Hiranyakashipu has used these terms, right? "To learn devotional service is the duty of everyone. Therefore, the spontaneous education of Prahlad Maharaj is supported as auspicious and perfect. Right? Because otherwise he's saying, where did you get all this inauspicious and imperfect knowledge? Right? So he said, no, it can never be inauspicious or imperfect. Devotional service is always, you know, perfect. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.